Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of Wrestle Chat Radio's Raw Report. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in the frozen tundra known as upstate New York. And for the next hour, we will be discussing last night's very first Raw of 2018 at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486, if you'd like to get in on the conversation. Of course, you can always log into the chat room, and we'll take your questions, your comments, and your opinions there as well. Before we get started, since this is the first broadcast of Wrestle Chat Radio in 2018, we'd like to wish you all a very happy 2018, a very happy new year. And thank you for making this broadcast grow by leaps and bounds over the last year. You know, we started this on a very small scale, and it's grown each and every year now. And this has been our biggest year ever. And of course, 2018, we're looking forward to even bigger and even better. So thank you all for listening. Thank you all for your loyalty. Anyway, the first Raw of 2018, and we are promised Roman Reigns against Samoa Joe for the Intercontinental belt, with a stipulation, of course, that if Roman Reigns is disqualified, Roman Reigns will have to forfeit the belt to Samoa Joe. We are also told that Asuka, for the first time, is going to meet some stiff competition as she takes on Alexa Bliss, not for the championship, but still kind of a warm-up to the Royal Rumble. We're told Brock Lesnar is in the building, and things are looking pretty good, folks, for the start of the very first Raw of 2018. And, of course, we start out with a little bit of a twist, I guess, in the sense that Kurt Angle is in the ring doing what he does when all of a sudden out come the Bar. And Cesaro is without his mouthpiece, so we can understand what he's saying. And they basically say, look, last week it was bad enough that we were cheated out of our belts. Jason Jordan didn't belong in the match. What did he do to earn a tag team title match? Nothing other than to be your son. So it's blatant favoritism. And then if you don't believe us that it's blatant favoritism, why would the general manager of a show walk down the aisle to applaud the victory of someone on his show? Look what you did. This brings out Jason Jordan alone, who gets booed. And basically says, if I didn't deserve the belt, then it's odd because I'm holding on to it. That's interesting. And Seth Rollins then comes out to a much larger reaction and admonishes him, saying, you know, you kind of got baited out here. There's two of them and one of you. They could have jumped you. You got to start thinking about your tag team partner a little bit. We don't have to like each other, but we do have to watch each other's backs. So I'm going to be out here for you during this match that Kurt Angle just made. Cesaro versus Jason Jordan. I'll be out here to make sure Sheamus doesn't interfere, but I fear I'm just out here to watch you lose. Which was a weird thing to say, and I'm not sure why that was part of the script, but that's what he said. And we got what I thought was a pretty decent match. Now, this crowd was not reacting to this match until Seth Rollins got physically involved by attacking Sheamus, who was attempting to interfere. This crowd was dead. And it wasn't really a bad match, so I'm not really sure why the crowd was dead, but the crowd was dead. Maybe too much partying the night before. I don't know. But all night long, the crowd was a little bit unresponsive. I have to think that Jason Jordan is doing, you know, a really good job of playing this quasi-heel that's trying to be a face. But if they don't do something with it quickly, it may run its course before they get to the payoff. And we know what the payoff's going to be. Jordan is going to just turn complete heel and probably turn on Rollins. And because Dean Ambrose being out, perhaps even through WrestleMania, this could be Seth Rollins' opponent going forward. I didn't think Raw was off to a bad start, Mike, but I was a little concerned given the fact that the crowd seemed dead from the very beginning.
Yeah, and look, it didn't, I mean, from what was it, two or last week or whatever it was, where everything was a hot reaction, you know. If you remember last week's Raw and even the SmackDown, everything they did was a hot reaction. Of course,
yep.
That was the Chicago crowd and stuff. And it, like you said, it was somewhat dead, and it had no reason to be dead because it was a halfway decent match, you know. You know, we got to see what Jason Jordan does in the ring. We got to see, you know, and I appreciated that they finally asked Sheamus to get rid of that mouthpiece.
You mean Cesaro, yeah. That's bad, yeah. Couldn't understand a word he said. It was really bad. But all in all, Sabretooth, I thought the match was pretty good, and I thought Raw was off to a decent start, and I was certainly looking forward to the other matches that they had, given us ahead of time for the night.
Yeah, and also I'm kind of liking the dynamic they're playing between Seth and Jason Jordan because it seems like they're going to make it seem like as to where, like, Seth is going to really get – he's going to kind of get attached to this kid, which is going to make that heel turn even more painful when it happens. So I think it's starting out rocky now, but I think, like, over time, he's going to warm up to Jason Jordan being his partner. Like I said, now building up for this big heel turn, and when it comes, it's going to be big. So I think it's what they're getting going down to.
That would be the smart move. The smart move would be to start out Seth Rollins very skeptical of Jason Jordan and trying to give him some advice and some tough love and whatever you want to say. But then eventually it should lead to Seth Rollins having a respect for him and saying, you know, wow, he is really good and whatever. And then you're right. That'll make the turn that much more bitter when it happens. So far so good, Todd. I mean, I thought the match was okay. The crowd wasn't good, but the match was.
You know, like you said, the crowd was like dead during that match until the end, sort of, where Jason Jordan got the win.
As soon as Seth Rollins interfered, then they popped a little bit. Aside from that, very dead reaction, so I was worried. Well, I needn't have been. Because pretty much from this point out, with one very notable exception, there wasn't a whole hell of a lot to cheer for. Bray Wyatt, for some inexplicable reason, is fighting Apollo Crews. Now, the only reason, of course, is we have to build Bray Wyatt up for Matt Hardy. We have to build Bray Wyatt up as a guy who's dangerous, and we got to throw him a match. He can pretty much, you know, handle the guy, show what he can do, set the framework for him and Matt Hardy, which is perfectly fine and perfectly understandable, except you really didn't do that because Apollo Crews got in an awful lot of offense. And there was a millisecond there when I thought, Jesus Christ, they're going to let him win. Or Matt Hardy is going to show up on the Titantron and cause him to lose or something. Well, they didn't go that far. But I really don't think you can have a 50-50 back-and-forth match with Apollo Crews and look like a world beater. They wouldn't have done that to Braun Strowman and didn't later on. And they wouldn't do it to anybody else who was setting up for a big feud. They did do it to Bray Wyatt. And I thought something very interesting happened. And that is after Bray Wyatt, by the way, I'm liking the Dana Brooke thing. That's one of the few things I'm liking lately. Dana Brooke as the statistics analyzer or whatever the hell she is kind of working. Keeps her out of the ring because right now she needs a lot more training. And it's just, I like the whole Titus Worldwide thing. But in this particular sense, I think Bray Wyatt had to go in there and really destroy Apollo Crews. And that didn't happen. Then Matt Hardy gets on the screen. And he does the laugh again in Triple H. It looks like they're trying to do, you know, the Brady Bunch thing. All of a sudden it's, you know, the tic-tac-toe board. And then that turns to double that and triple that and whatever. And it's just, you know, there's a fine line between eclectic and unusual and bizarre and just plain annoying. And I think Matt Hardy's starting to reach the line of annoying. And what's worse is I think he's starting to reach the line of annoying with fans. Because Bray Wyatt actually got a bigger pop, in my opinion. Now, initially, when Matt Hardy comes on, he gets the pop and people yell and delete. But I don't know. I just got that sense that that crowd, which, of course, was what, Miami, was more into the Bray Wyatt character as a whole than the broken or woken Matt Hardy character, Sabretooth. What do you think?
Yeah, I agree. And also, I agree with what you said about, you know, like, you know, I mean, Apollo Crews got in, like, a lot of offense, which is fine, but they should have had it as to where there was a reason he was getting in that offense. Like, I mean, they could have at least had, like, Matt Hardy popping in on the Titantron, distracting Bray Wyatt, which would allow Apollo Crews to get that much offense in. But, yeah, but he needed to look strong, and letting Apollo Crews take it to him that way didn't really help him, you know. But it should have had it, like, as to where, like I said, he was, like, distracted.
Yeah, I was thinking they were going to play that laugh over the announced thing, and Bray Wyatt would look around for where's it coming from, and then Apollo Crews would get the upper hand and it would continue, something like that, something that would make it appear that Bray Wyatt could finish off Apollo Crews a bit easier if it weren't for Matt Hardy's distraction. Didn't happen, though, Todd, and you know, a 50-50 match I don't think helped Bray Wyatt a lot.
No, it didn't. It didn't really help Bray Wyatt a lot. Like you said, it's annoying. It was annoying when he did the gimmick in the first place in Impact Wrestling. It's still annoying today.
Yeah, I've always found it a bit annoying, Mike, but this week it was more annoying than usual with the, you know, changing the faces and cutting them in two and then four and then eight and then 16 and 32 and, God, you know, endlessly just annoying stuff.
Right. It's almost to the point of, who do they want to be the heel and who do they want to be the face in this whole thing? I mean, the way they treated Bray Wyatt and the way the fans reacted to Bray Wyatt, it's almost as if they're about ready to turn Bray face.
You know, the thing is, I just don't know. I don't know if you could do it off of Matt Hardy because no one's taking it seriously. That's the problem. No one's taking this seriously. They're not even portraying the awoken Matt Hardy like they did the broken Matt Hardy, which is kind of dark and weird and eclectic. They're sort of almost just putting him in front of a camera with no lighting, no special look to it. And it just, without that feel that they gave it with the lighting and the backdrop and everything, it kind of looks goofy. It doesn't come off as bizarre or unusual. It just comes off as like a grown man making a damn fool out of himself. That's kind of what it comes off as. And I wonder why they're not doing this dark, you know, outside in front of them, you know, a forest or a wall or, you know, candle lit or whatever the hell, a bonfire, whatever happens to be. I wonder why they're not giving it that feel. It's like watching a horror movie, you know, it would be like watching Jason, but it's, you know, on, it's not dark and there's no gloomy music and there's no whatever. And you're like, it's not as scary. Matt Hardy had a feel of satire always, but it was a dark satire. And it came from that whole feel of the camera work and the lighting, and they're just not doing it. And it's hurting them. I think that's hurting this entire gimmick to the point where it's just, it starts to look like a grown man making a damn fool out of himself. Anyway, what happened there. Crowd wasn't into this match. There's no reason to be into this match. They seemed a little more into Bray Wyatt than Matt Hardy, at least in Miami. And then we get the big news. Asuka, of course, is going to go for a non-title match against Alexa Bliss. And Alexa Bliss, earlier in the show, in the beginning, had tried to beg out of this match. Now, I realize she's a heel. And I realize that heels do heel things, like, I don't want to fight this person. But to actually go to the general manager and beg not to have this match after she was attacked last week by Asuka, unprovoked, which she said, really just makes her look terrible. It makes her look like a weak, frightened little girl who was lucky to be the champion. Think that's what you want out of Alexa Bliss. I'd have much rather had Alexa Bliss say, I want Asuka. That would have been great, you know. To come out and say, after she attacked me last week, I want her. I don't want her in a title match because that's not fair. I don't want her rewarded for what she did, but I want her. because then we'd at least said, well, come what may, Alexa Bliss will stand up for herself or whatever. No, that's not what happened at all. So Alexa Bliss goes into this match, non-title match. So is there anyone in the arena that thinks that Asuka's not winning? It's a non-title match, folks, so that is the exact same thing as saying Asuka's winning. And to be honest, Asuka gave Alexa Bliss some chance of offense, but not a whole hell of a lot. And Asuka is extremely overrated when it comes to certain things, and one of the things she's extremely overrated for is selling. Because one minute she will be screaming in agony that her ribs hurt, and the next moment she's doing her dance after she won. So how bad could your ribs be hurt, Asuka? Or she's doing moves that would require those muscles in the rib cage to be stretched, and you're like, well, I don't think you'd do that. I know somebody nailed my arm with the ring stairs 6 times, and that was the arm that I had to rely on to do a clothesline, then I'm going to have to do it with the other arm, aren't I? Asuka doesn't do that. And to be honest, she just always comes across as a heel. Her whole persona, everything about her comes across as a heel to me. And I don't know why they're insisting on making her a face. So she beats the hell basically out of Alexa Bliss. Yes, Alexa Bliss gets some offense, but this is your champion. This is your champion. This isn't some middle-of-the-pack girl who you say, well, she got some offense in, but of course, Asuka's going to win. No, this is your champion. To be honest with you, there shouldn't have been an ending to this match. To be honest with you, it should have been a double count out, double disqualification. Alexa Bliss gets counted out or disqualified or whatever it happens to be. But at the end, the story should have been that Alexa Bliss is walking out with a smile on her face and the belt, and Asuka's in the ring saying, maybe she's tougher than I thought she was, or maybe she's more devious than I thought she was. I won't make that mistake the second time. So I didn't expect Asuka to lose, but I expected maybe Alexa Bliss does something to get disqualified, gives Asuka a real fight for her money where, you know, the announcers are playing up. You know, I don't think Asuka quite expected this from Alexa Bliss. Now, Asuka may be smiling in the ring, but she's smiling because, you know what? She's a little better than I thought she was. I won't make that mistake again. That's what I wanted to see. Instead, it's like, no, I can dominate her anytime I want. It's just a matter of getting her in the ring. And I'll be the champion. And I thought that was a very, very lousy way to handle that, Mike.
Yeah, it was a very lousy way to handle it. And look, the ending that should have happened here was Absolution comes out. Looks like they're going to attack Asuka, but attacks Alexa Bliss otherwise, you know, and beats her down. And while Asuka's smiling in the background, you know. That should have been the ending.
I mean, look, they could have had that. Paige was not cleared to wrestle, so she wasn't even there. I don't know whether they're making less of this injury she suffered at Sasha Banks' dropkick to the back of the neck on purpose, or they're just erring on the side of caution. But we were told it was nothing. We were told, no, it's just safety precaution. She's been checked out. She's fine. She's not going to do any more house shows, but she'll be at Raw. Then all of a sudden it was, no, now she's not even going to be cleared for Raw. So we'll stay tuned to that. But they could have had the other girls come out. But I'd much rather not even had that. If they were going to interfere, they should have interfered and beat the both of them up. And that way it would have been like, okay, well, they ruined a good match. But the way this was handled, Sabretooth, to me, just makes Alexa Bliss look like a lucky champion. Okay, for some reason we're having trouble with the phone, so hang on 1 second. See if we can get Sabretooth on the line. This happens occasionally. I don't know why. Okay,
hello?
I think we got you. Sabretooth, what do you think?
Yeah, like I said, this is like the one bit of appeal that stuck in my craw because she was overselling her fear of Asuka too much. She was just overselling it. I mean, she's no bigger than any other girl, but she's scared to death of her. Now, since Nia
right.
Jax, now I can see her being that scared. But this is Asuka. Come on, she's no
right.
bigger than any of those other girls, and she's going to Nia Jax for help against, I mean, come on. I mean, and she was billed as being the so-called 5 Feet of Fury, as to where she might not be the biggest dog in the fight, but she has a lot of fight in her. What was that last night? She's running scared, begging the general manager to cancel the match. She's running outside the ring with this scared rabbit look on her face. I totally hated that overselling. I hated that. I totally hated it.
I hated it, too, because, again, to me, it makes Asuka look like the bad guy. I just don't get it. I just don't get it. And if anything, you want Asuka, at this point, if you're thinking about making Asuka win the Rumble and going after Alexa Bliss, you want Asuka to look like this is going to be a bigger fight than I thought. So fans can say, oh, you know what? This isn't going to be a cakewalk for Asuka. So last night should have been the indoctrination of welcome to the world of Alexa Bliss, where crazy things happen and Alexa Bliss finds a way to make sure you don't come out looking too good. Even if it's she gets disqualified or she gets counted out purposely or whatever it happens to be, she walks away with a smile on her face. That's the way it should have been. So you could say, you know what? I don't think Asuka's dealt with someone like Alexa Bliss, the deviousness of Alexa Bliss, or the length she is willing to go. And Asuka could acknowledge that by simply just sitting in that ring with a smile on her face, like, okay, now I see. Now I see what I'm up against. That would have been better. It would have made fans root for Asuka. Instead, I think more fans are rooting for Alexa Bliss now. I didn't hear a lot of Asuka chants last night. There was some mixed ones, but there was also some Alexa Bliss chance. So we'll see where that goes. I thought that was a disaster, to be perfectly honest, Todd. What do you think?
You're absolutely right there. I think, well, like you said, I hear more of a Alexa Bliss chance than the Asuka chance. I think you're going to see a double switch at the Royal Rumble.
Well, I don't know what's going to happen, but I can tell you this. Asuka as a face has been handled totally wrong. We had speculated that the day she showed up, her debut on Raw, she should have been gang-jumped by the whole bunch of girls, and her debut should have been spoiled. And then get that albatross off her neck, and all the fans would have said, wow, that was low class. You know, we were looking forward to Asuka and her debut, and these jealous bitches jumped her, and, you know, that's ridiculous, and I can't wait to see her get revenge on them all. Instead, she comes across as like a female Goldberg, where people are like, well, I'm tired of these girls that I happen to admire or like being fed to Asuka, and she doesn't have to do anything. She doesn't have to sell that they're halfway decent. She just gets in the ring, and, oh, I'm so much better than you. I can just cakewalk over you. You're not in my league. And you know what? That builds resentment with fans. And then what ends up happening is fans start to say, I'm rooting for the underdog, because your nature is to root for the underdog. The only time your nature isn't to root for the underdog is, like, for instance, The Undertaker. When The Undertaker turned face, they put him up against the worst heels they could find, because the fans' perspective psychologically was, these guys have no idea what they're in for. They're not going to be able to pull this crap on The Undertaker. He's going to beat their ass. But that's because they did horrible things. None of these girls have done horrible things to Asuka. So she's out there beating their ass with a big smile on her face, and it looks like she's just a cocky bitch who says, I don't respect any of you. So how is that a face? I don't get that. So I thought that was a really bad decision on the WWE's part. We then get Braun Strowman versus Rhino. Now, Braun Strowman had been suffering from the flu, but I guess he's okay. He comes down there in a non-match. Let's face it, it's not a match. And he just mauls Rhino, and then he mauls Heath Slater, and then he repeatedly gives them all his finishing maneuver to the delight of the crowd. What do you say? You're promoting Braun Strowman to go into this triple threat thing. Fine. You know, it is what it is. You threw away Rhino and Heath Slater. These are tag team champions. So, you know, he basically destroyed them both single-handedly, which is, I guess, all right. He's supposed to be Braun Strowman. That's what he's supposed to do. But I don't know. You know, it leaves me wondering if you couldn't find something better than just destroying former tag team champions, Mike.
Yeah, it's sad how far these two guys, and we know what's up with Rhino. He's not long for, you know,
he's not long for the WWE. His career is just about done. And after that, I don't foresee anything with Heath Slater, anything specific with Heath Slater. In the, I know he's got a longer-term deal, and you could make something of Heath Slater, but I don't know if they want to. So I can see why they would do this, but again, they're ex-tag team champions. You should have, if you're not doing this with a tag team, find a tag team. I mean, again, bring in local talent, a local talent tag team if you're going to do this, you know?
Yeah, I mean, they're trying to do some weird gimmick with Slater and Rhino. Rhino trying to toughen up Slater. How did that work when Rhino got his ass beat and Slater had to try to save him? So I don't even get where they're coming from on that Sabretooth. It seems odd.
Yeah, I was expecting a much better match between Braun Strowman and Rhino, because Rhino isn't a small guy. I mean, he should at least held his own better against Braun Strowman than what they did. I mean, that was basically a squash match, and I don't really like how Rhino was done. I mean, sure, he's not getting pushed, but still at the same time, though, Rhino is a pretty strong guy and can hold his own against Braun Strowman. He might not win the match, but he can hold his own better than what he was portrayed to do last night. I just didn't like it.
Yeah, I would have liked to have seen at least one spear take Braun Strowman off his feet in the one shot, so they could have said, my God, he took Braun Strowman off his feet in one shot with that spear. You know, that's his go-to move. Okay, Strowman survived it, but, you know, at least a little something. If you're not going to do that, if you're just going to give him a squash match, then I think Mike is right. Just bring in some local talent and squash him. What do you think, Todd?
You're absolutely right there. By the looks of it, I got that feeling as well with Rhino and Heath Slater. I got that feeling you're going to see that tag team splitting up soon if they keep doing this losing streak and this tough.
That's what they're going to do. They're going to do some kind of thing where Rhino and Slater fight. That, I mean, you know, but the buildup is weird, and it's not really clear where they're going with this, and they're not really giving it much time or really fleshing it out, so I don't think it's going to amount to anything. We then get, I thought Samoa Joe did a pretty good interview with Renee Young on his way to this match with Roman Reigns. And Samoa Joe's a much better heel. You know, Joe's been a face many times in his career, and he's a much better heel. Now, I'm not going to lie. I really thought this is where Roman Reigns would lose the belt, because I said, well, this makes sense. He's going into the Royal Rumble in a few weeks. They're going to need that belt away from him, probably. Because if he goes in the Royal Rumble with the belt, it's almost, again, like, I don't really want this belt. I'd rather have the big one. So I was hoping that this would probably be the spot, and I thought Joe would probably be a good guy to give it to at this stage. As a matter of fact, I was thinking, gee, I wonder if they're going to give it to Joe, so when The Miz makes his big return back, he might flip. You know, the Miztourage has been getting their share of laughs, and people are starting to like him, and I was starting to wonder, is this where they're going to go with this? Joe's going to have the belt and The Miz is going to return more as a face, or maybe as a heel, and Joe kind of starts leaning the other way or something. But I thought this was the moment, because with this stipulation, I thought this is how you get the belt away from Roman Reigns without Roman Reigns looking weak. He doesn't get pinned. He hasn't been forced to submit. He simply beat the hell out of Samoa Joe, and the referee disqualified him. Or Joe baits him into getting disqualified. You know, the old push him in front of the referee, which is what he did. I really thought this is the moment where we're going to have a new Intercontinental Champion. And it was a good match. Because of that reason, I'm saying, okay, I even thought at one moment after Jason Jordan had done his backstage interview saying, if Sheamus and Cesaro come down there, we got your back. I thought for a moment, maybe somehow Jason Jordan is going to get Roman Reigns disqualified. And if that happens, that's going to be an interesting dynamic, because then he can go to Seth Rollins and say, your stupid ass tag team partner got me disqualified and I lost my goddamn belt. And Seth Rollins could be kind of torn between, you're right, he's an idiot, but with a tag team, you know, there would have been a dynamic there that would have been really interesting. And I really thought that was going to happen. I thought Jason Jordan is going to be responsible for Roman Reigns losing this belt. But no. Samoa Joe is clean pinned. And if you're a Samoa Joe fan, I'm sorry to tell you, no, it's no big deal losing to Roman Reigns. No, it doesn't mean he's buried. But yes, it does mean that he's not a serious contender. He's been manhandled by Brock Lesnar. He's been manhandled by Braun Strowman. And now he's been beaten by Roman Reigns. So where does that put him? If those three guys are above him, he's in the middle of the pack. And I think that's a shame. This was the spot. This should have been the moment. And if I was the booker, I'd have found some way for Jason Jordan to make that disqualification happen. Whereas Roman Reigns could say it almost looked like it was intentional. I mean, what the hell was he even doing down there? You know, in some way, so that, again, Seth Rollins could play off it and say, don't kill him. I know it looks bad. He's an idiot. He thought he was doing you a favor. It didn't work out. And that would have helped seal the bond between Jason Jordan and Seth Rollins, too, that Rollins is starting to warm up to the kid a little bit. He realizes he's green. He realizes he made a bunch of mistakes. You know, trying to smooth it over with Roman. I just think that would have been so much better, Sabretooth, overall.
Yeah, because I didn't – well, first of all, I didn't like the whole stipulation of the where – If he got disqualified, then he loses the belt. No, all I do is just say like a no DQ match. That would have, you know, all I had to say no DQ. And also right. when they said that Roman Reigns was fined $5,000 for like pushing the referee, I'm like, okay, so he's fined and punished for that, but he can attempt to kill Braun Strowman and suffer no consequences for it. I mean, I'm like, okay, so now, but yeah.
Push an official,
yeah,
you get punished. Attempted murder, no big deal. Yeah.
Right. But but that match shouldn't have ended like that, though, because, basically, he beat Samoa Joe clean, basically. I mean, it shouldn't have ended like that. I mean, because now when they fight the next time, basically, going out the last night, there should be no more matches between these two guys. I mean, Roman Reigns just watched that whole feud right there.
That's right. And listen, Samoa Joe's whole banter, his whole gimmick is, I don't lose much, and when I do lose, I usually say it was a fluke. Oh, Brock Lesnar got lucky. He could never get lucky again. Well, how many times is somebody going to get lucky? How many times are you going to say that before fans don't buy it anymore? And they're just like, listen, Samoa Joe's middle of the pack. He doesn't beat these guys. It's, you know, you can't do it. I really thought the opposite was going to happen. If Jason Jordan didn't come down, which I was hoping would happen, it's the perfect way to get the belt away from Roman. But if that didn't happen, I thought, well, they're going to get double counted out, or Samoa Joe's going to get disqualified. And then they're going to have that match next week again with another stipulation. I thought they were going to keep this thing going in some way, shape, or form that was going to lead to Joe eventually getting that belt, because he's the most logical guy to give it to at this point. Instead, it looks like they've washed their hands of that, Mike, and they have no intention of giving it to Joe.
It really does, and that's sad, because, you know, you look at Joe, and Joe's a guy that could – we talked about it before, how they want guys that – when their music hits, you know, you're going to say, uh-oh, here they come. Somebody, it doesn't matter, face or heel, somebody's going to get their behind whooped. You know, that's what Joe should be. I mean, yeah, he don't have to win the title to be that, but that's what Joe should be. And he's not. And it's not the guy's fault. It's not Roman Reigns' fault. And that's the boy's fault. It's all booking.
Right. Now, Andy is writing me saying, well, the reason they didn't want Joe to win the belt is they want Joe in the Rumble. Okay, but here's the deal. Joe in the Rumble, why? You think he's winning? Does anybody think he's winning? We already know Samoa Joe's not winning the Rumble, so why do we want him in the Rumble? I'd rather see him have a title defense. If you give me the option of Joe's in the Rumble and you know damn well he's not winning, or Joe is defending his title against somebody worthy, I take the latter. So I don't think that's a good excuse. Maybe you're right. That might be the excuse the WWE would use, but it's the wrong excuse. Because Joe's not winning the Rumble. You think they're going to let a guy who just dropped to Roman Reigns win the Rumble to go on and face Brock Lesnar? No. So what's the point? It's a moot point to have Joe in the Rumble at this point. A moot point. Other than to start a feud with somebody, maybe. And that's not even worth it. Give the damn belt to him. Let him stay out of the Rumble. It's better he's out of the Rumble and doesn't lose the Rumble than he's in the Rumble and gets tossed, which is exactly what's going to happen. We then get to just a bizarre thing. First off, we should report that Enzo Amore, this is no baloney, Enzo Amore was hospitalized. That's how sick Enzo Amore was. Now, I don't know if he remains in the hospital, but he was taken to the hospital, and he stayed in the hospital, at least for a while. And I guess it's the flu or pneumonia or whatever the hell's going around, but he was hospitalized, so that's no joke, and that was no gimmick. But the WWE was woefully, apparently unprepared, because instead of Cedric Alexander finding another partner, which there are any number of partners on the 205 Live roster, for some reason, which is unknown to anyone, Goldust comes out. Last time I saw Goldust, he was a heel. Apparently he's a face again. And here we go with the wacky, mixed-up world of WWE where you say, why did we go through all this then? Why did you give us all this Shattered Dream Productions thing again and Goldust going back to his roots? Why did you do that when it led to absolutely nothing? And here he is now, out being the good guy again. He comes out to help Cedric Alexander, who has no tag team partners, because mysteriously, Cedric Alexander has went from one of the most popular guys on the 205 Live roster to a man who apparently has no friends. Why would he have no friends? It's baffling. And then on top of it, Goldust is, and then Booker T chimes in with, Goldust is a good 230 pounds. Yeah, I would say so. I would say about 260 pounds. And he's in a cruiserweight match. And nobody's saying anything. And to make it worse, it was a brutal match. There was no saving this match. And believe me when I tell you, I'm a huge Goldust fan. I'll watch him wrestle any day of the week. But the timing was so bad with the 205 Live guys that at one point, Daivari and Gulak are standing there watching Goldust on the top buckle for 40 seconds before he jumps. Either one of them could have moved out of the way or gotten out of the ring or pushed him off or done anything. And they just stand there looking at him like King Kong on the Empire State Building going, yeah, he's up there. Yeah, he's still up there. Wonder what he's going to do up there. I don't know. What do you think he's going to do? I really don't know. He might jump off at us, you think? I don't think he'd do that. Oh, he did. Well, that was just terrible. Terrible. Terrible timing. Whole match was terrible. And I just have no clue. I know it had to be thrown together last minute, but I'd have much rather seen a one-on-one match. I don't even understand the concept behind this match, Mike.
I don't either, especially the fact that, I mean, when they first get out there, Gulak comes out there and does his shtick and actually does a funny version of what some good work on the mic by doing a funny version of Enzo's shtick, you know? That was hilarious to me. And
especially when he corrects the cup of haters and says, well, that's wrong. I think it's supposed to be
yeah,
cup of
really.
Wrong.
I mean,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you couldn't have found somebody, I mean, a Tommy or anybody. You couldn't even introduce somebody, you know? We know that Rockstar Spud is there. He's signed.
Oh, that's who I thought
you
it was going to be. I thought either a Tommy or Spud. That's exactly what I thought, Mike. You read my mind. Instead, Goldust comes out, and Sabretooth, for a heartbeat, I thought he's going to introduce somebody like he's going to manage him. Maybe this is Goldust's future. He's going to not wrestle so much, but he's going to be a management type guy on 205 Live. So I'm real interested. I'm like, oh, this could be great. Maybe he's going to manage Rockstar Spud or something like that. Instead, it's just Goldust. Really weird.
Yeah, it was real. That was weird booking. And like you said, how can Cedric Alexander go from being the most popular guy to not having any friends in the locker room? I'm like, where did that come from? I mean, because, like, all the times that he's been, like, teaming with other guys, they seem to like him pretty much. I mean, what the – I mean, so – and yeah, and this should, and this was, and this, if they weren't going to introduce anybody, it just should have been like a one-on-one match between him and Gulag or the other guy. I mean, it's just, I mean, like, this match helped no one. It didn't help Cedric Alexander. It sure as hell didn't help Goldust. And it didn't help anybody.
It didn't help anybody, and it didn't do anything to further anything. I just don't understand the concept of it. I really thought Goldust was going to introduce somebody that he was taking under his wing or something, Todd, but it didn't happen.
You're absolutely right there. I thought the same thing, too, where Goldust is going to come out with somebody to manage in the 205 Live division.
Which would have been great.
It would have been great.
That would have been awesome, Todd.
It would be awesome to do to bring somebody out to manage, but instead we saw him wrestle. It was like, it was terrible.
It was, and he's not a terrible wrestler, but the timing, it was a terrible match. It was just a terrible match. Just terrible. We then get to Nostradamus of professional wrestling myself. Said the club will reform in 2018. Well, I only had to wait one day. I only had to wait one day, and they reformed the club. But here's the thing that kills me. You're going to reform the club, and you do it in the least spectacular, least effective way you can possibly do it. It meant nothing. There was no rhyme or reason to it. It's just, oh, well, I needed a tag team, a couple of guys for the three-man tag, so I went to my friends. Rather than there be a need for it where Balor has to go to them and they reluctantly say, I don't know, you know, and then it happens. You know, you could have got so much out of this. And instead you just threw it away as, oh, well, the whole show's down to crapper anyway, you know, let's do this and that'll cause headlines. That'll be a big thing. You guys reformed. For what reason? No reason. For no reason. And if you guys remember, I had said, if you take Balor and you put him with Anderson and Gallows, Balor becomes a different guy. And you could see Balor be that smug little boss sort of guy that you want to see knocked on his ass. But he's got these other guys backing him up. And Balor kind of gave that feel last night even. You could have a really good heel faction with them. But instead, they don't even let them all come out together. Balor comes out separately. It didn't even feel like a reunion. Who are they facing? They're facing Elias, which we should talk about that. Elias did a very funny promo again in the ring where he basically introduces the talents of the Miztourage. One's playing a cowbell, and I don't even know what Curtis Axel had, and I'm a musician. I don't know what the hell it was. Some kind of maraca or some, I don't know what the hell he had, but he wasn't really using it. He was basically just singing Old Ang Syne as badly as you could possibly imagine anybody singing it. And oddly, even Elias thinks it because he says, you know what, thanks, but I think I'll handle it from here. Then he's interrupted. The Miztourage has kind of been played for comedy, and I hope that doesn't rub off on Elias, because while Elias can be funny, I don't want to see him be a comedy wrestler. There's too much to him. So let's hope that doesn't happen. This was a squash match. How long was this match? A couple minutes? And it meant nothing. And I thought to myself, my God, Sabretooth, they've thrown away what could be a huge, huge moment in pro wrestling to have the Balor Club reform, and they just threw it away as an, oh, by the way, sort of moment.
They did the same thing. They did the same thing last night. The same thing they did with Kurt Angle's return back to the ring when he teamed up with the Shield. I mean, he didn't have to. That should be the reason for Kurt Angle getting that ring. The same way, that should be a reason for the Bullet Club getting back together. And they just totally. I mean, like, so now when they officially do it, it's not going to mean anything. And also,
could
they got
you not
back together.
Could you not have had Finn Balor say in his typical way, No, I didn't find any tag team partners, Kurt. You know the deal. We're short-handed here after the new year. I'm not just going to go to anybody. If this is what needs to happen, I've taken on the Miztourage by myself. I'll take all three of them on by myself. So it's just me against them. And then when he's really getting his ass whooped, down comes the club and they clean house, and the last thing you see on Raw is them guys standing there. That makes sense.
Right. And what sucks is, like, they got them back together. Like you said, those guys got back together for a squash match. They didn't do the Shield like that. The Shield didn't get back together in that first match with a squash match. They fought the New Day.
Right.
You know,
right.
So I don't get the mindset of, I mean, I don't know if they hate guys from Japan or what.
I need to go back to my friends because we're facing the almighty challenge of the Miztourage and Elias. Are you kidding? In order for that to happen, something bad should have happened to Finn Balor, where he says, you know, I've kind of dissed my friends, unfortunately, and I don't really have a lot of friends in this business. And then Anderson and Gallows say, let's put that behind us. You know, regardless of how we felt about you 6 months ago, you were always still one of us. And you're always going to be one of us. We're always going to be a team. Whether we argue or we fight or we don't. But other people aren't going to do this. You know, there's a reason. There has to be a motivation for the club decides, yes, we need this. Their motivation is the Miztourage? Holy crap, is that throwing it away? And then it's a squash match, Mike. It meant nothing.
It really is. And look, I understood why they didn't have that moment that you spoke of earlier as the last moment, because they wanted Brock. The last thing you see that night was to be Brock Lesnar, not the club, which it would have made more sense if it was the club. The last thing you see as Raw is going off the air is the club standing up with
doing
their
the two-sweet thing, yep.
Doing the two-sweet thing, you know. That should have been the last thing you saw. But I understand what they because Brock Lesnar's got this big contract, and he's the big guy. They wanted him to be the last thing you saw.
You're absolutely right, Mike. And that moment should have been Finn Balor should have been giving a really good accounting of himself, but the numbers game, you could have had Corey Graves and the announcers say, look, Finn Balor is an extraordinary man, and he can do extraordinary things. He can't beat these three guys by himself. And that's all there is to it. He can't do it. And when he looks like he doesn't do it, I would have had him lose. I would have had him lose to Elias after 5 minutes, 6 minutes of trying his best. But that's not good enough. And these guys continue to beat on Balor, and then out comes the club. They clear the ring of all three guys together. Balor gets up, looks confused. What are you guys doing here? They reluctantly put up the hand gesture. The last thing you see is all three of those guys standing there in that ring doing that. That makes the difference, Mike. I mean, Sabretooth.
Right. But instead, what do we get?
We're going to get to what we got because I got news for you. Of all the Brock Lesnar endings or middles or beginnings that I have seen, this has to be the worst. This has to be the drizzling shits of them all. And for absolutely no good reason, because you had a really good skit there going where Kane said, for the only time probably in my life, I've just come here to talk. We need to take out Brock Lesnar, and we can do that together if you listen to me. And Braun Strowman says, I don't need to listen to anybody. How the hell would you? If Braun Strowman had have only said, I'll listen, then we would have said something's coming. It might be coming right now. What that should have ended with is far different than what we got. Brock Lesnar no-sells the chokeslam and laughs when he does the pop-up because that's supposed to be like The Undertaker. So he's kind of mocking Kane's brother. Turns his head, knocks Kane the hell out of the ring. There's a brawl ensues, and the locker room's clear, and they're trying to get Kane away from Brock Lesnar. Braun Strowman should have hit that area and start tossing people like, you know, garbage to the left and right, and we should have had a hell of a brawl to end Raw. That's just totally out of control. Instead, we get nothing. I actually said to myself, this isn't the end of Raw. There's got to be something else going on. They didn't end it this way, did they? And then on comes some football show, and I'm like, they've ended it. That's the way they ended the first Raw of 2018. This is awful. It was inexcusably bad. Mike, I thought this was the worst segment I've seen Brock Lesnar do in a very long time.
It really was, and it didn't help that the previous segment was as bad as it was, you know? I mean, let's just say for the simple argument that you didn't want to have, which they did, but you wanted to end it with him with Brock Lesnar, and you didn't want to end it with the club, with that moment with the club reuniting. All right, fine. Just push the club up one spot and have them reunite after that. And that moment is a big moment. And then you come back and you do what you said with this thing. Instead of having them just a big pull apart, have Braun Strowman come out and do what he's going to do and throw people around and maybe even throw what's his name on his shoulder and power slam the Advocate, you know?
Look, the thing is, if you'd have just done the thing I said where Braun Strowman says, I'm willing to listen, what do you got in mind? That would have teased fans, wait a minute, Braun Strowman's going to listen to Kane? Is Braun Strowman going to go back to being that evil heel? Then when he comes down and decimates everybody, leaves Brock Lesnar lying in a heap, and leaves Kane lying in a heap, he could just lean over him and say, I don't need you, I don't need anybody. And you say, he fooled him. He told Kane he was going to come down and do something, and he never did until Kane's ass was already beat. Then he came down and cleaned house and told Kane, I don't need you. That would have been great for Braun Strowman, Sabretooth.
And I hate when they have these so-called brawls break out and the whole locker room comes out to break these guys up. I mean, they can come out to break that up, but they can't come out when Roman Reigns is fucking beating the shit out of Samoa Joe like last week.
Right,
you know?
Right. No. Yeah.
I mean, I hate those moments. The whole locker room is down here. That's the locker room. I mean, what sense is that? He needs protection.
They do it way too much with Lesnar, too, with these pull-apart brawls. They do it way too much. But wouldn't it have been great to see Braun Strowman come down there at the end, start tossing these preliminary guys, most of them were, or mid-carders, around, hit the big power slam on the outside of the ring to Brock Lesnar, hit the big power slam on the outside of the ring to Kane, then lean over Kane and say, I don't need you. I'm going to beat him all by myself. And the last thing you see is Braun Strowman roaring over the fallen bodies of everybody on Raw, including Brock Lesnar and Kane. And you say to yourself, holy crap, man, this guy decimated the whole entire Raw roster. That would have been kind of cool.
Now, the thing is, though, that in WWE booking, the one part that stinks is that Brock Lesnar looks – if Brock Lesnar can't be made to look weak, though. I mean, I should have had it with, like, I mean, both of them teaming up on Brock Lesnar. He can't have, I mean, the message that they should be getting out is that when these two guys get together, Brock Lesnar is in trouble.
Yeah, I mean, they could have done that, too. But the bottom line is they could have done a million things. It's better than what they did, because what did they do? They didn't do anything. They did yet another pull apart with Brock Lesnar. Didn't we see it with The Undertaker? Didn't we see it with Samoa Joe? Didn't we see it with Roman Reigns? We always see this. It's getting old. I'm going to tell you, this was not a good Raw. And on paper, it looked like it could have been. And with a little more effort, I think it could have been. But this was not. I didn't have a problem with the matches, problem with the way they were booked. On paper, this looks like a two-match show. You say, well, Alexa Bliss and Asuka, that's going to be important, and Roman Reigns and Samoa Joe, that's going to be important. But then if you add the surprise of the club is reforming, you're like, whoa, well, that sounds like a great show. And you got so little out of what should have been great. I mean, on paper, if you give me that, I'm like, whoa, that's going to be a Raw for the record books here. and it was a boring Raw for the most part, because you say the Alexa Bliss Asuka thing actually undermined their feud. The Roman Reigns Samoa Joe thing was a letdown, because you had your moment where you could have gotten that belt off Reigns and made Joe look good as a heel, taking that non-victory. Instead, Joe goes down the ladder, and the club reforms for no reason at all, to no reaction at all, or very little. Instead of that big moment you could have got from that. Yeah, I mean, if you set that on my desk and say, what do you think about this? The first thing I'm going to say is, no. If we're going to do the club, let's get the most out of it. Squeeze the most juice out of that orange you can. One drop of juice, you don't throw the orange away. And that's kind of what you did. You could have got so much more out of that. You could have got a major storyline, a huge feud, and a great angle out of the reforming of the club. You got nothing. You could have got Asuka and Alexa Bliss at a fever pitch. You got nothing. All you'd really got was making your champion look really, really, really weak and exposing her. Not a good thing. And you got nothing out of the Roman Reigns thing. I know you want to make Roman Reigns look strong. He can't lose because he's fighting Brock Lesnar. Well, he didn't lose. What would have been wrong with Samoa Joe doing something to cause Roman Reigns, even if he moves and Reigns spears the referee or hits the referee, and the referee in a moment of whatever says, you're disqualified. And then later you could add the referee say, you know, I probably did jump the gun. I was angry over what Reigns did last week when he shoved me and then he speared me and I was angry. In retrospect, I wouldn't have disqualified him. I'm seeing it's really not his fault, but the decision has to hold. There's nothing I can do. How does that make Roman Reigns look weak? That makes Samoa Joe look like a devious opportunist who got lucky to win the belt and he's crowing about it. And Roman Reigns, a guy who was a victim, didn't lose nothing. How is that bad for Roman Reigns? So I just don't get it, because you've undermined Joe. You've undermined Alexa Bliss now. You've undermined the reforming of the club, if it's going to be for more than one night. I don't even know. You've made Bray Wyatt look like, well, I can barely handle Apollo Crews, so I don't know how I'm going to handle the rest of them. I don't know. I just don't think it was a good Raw. The first Raw of 2018, I'm going to give it a D. Mike, what do you think?
I'm going to do a little bit better, but it's still going to be a D plus.
Yeah, you know, I'm giving it that because so many missed opportunities that were just lazy. Just lazy, Todd. They could have done better with exactly what they had. Don't even change the card. Just do better with what you had. What's your rating, Todd?
I got to go with you on this one. I got to go with a D as well.
Okay, and let's go down to Sabretooth. Sabretooth, it's not because I think that this was badly booked as far as the matches. It's just badly booked to how they ended them or what they got out of them.
Right. I'm going to give it a D, and I'm going to ask the question, of like, where are they going to find 30 women to fill up that female Royal Rumble, since how they're going to do it like the male Royal Rumble? So they got to come up with a shitload of women for that Royal Rumble.
Well, we're going to get all the NXT girls. We're probably going to get Trish Stratus. We're probably going to get Ronda Rousey. We may be getting a couple of other girls from the old school era in. Kelly, maybe some other girls. They're going to find them. But I got news. If Asuka wins, I'm going to go on record right now as saying, and I may change my mind before we do our Royal Rumble show, Asuka can't win this Royal Rumble. If Asuka wins this Royal Rumble, it's going to be the equivalent of when Roman Reigns first won the Royal Rumble and everybody turned on him. So if that's what they've got in mind for Asuka, is to win this Royal Rumble, they better think twice, unless they want her to be a heel. Anyway, folks, we will see you Friday with the SmackDown Report. Thanks for joining us. We'll talk to you then.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio. Wrestle Chat Radio is a Savage Blade production.